Hello, welcome. Gosh darn it. Thank you for joining us. All right, let's get started today. I tell you, I was trying to keep my chin up, if you will, on Friday. And, you know, because it's like, you know, markets trying to recover in the morning. And then, of course, just like it does every single day, feels like Lucy in the football, right? Boom. It goes down. It's like, okay, every single day. You know, it's like just this grinding process. And it is a grinding process we're going through. It's grinding out all the overdone things. And I think some of them have become overdone on the downside. Now, this is totally normal. Markets don't. This is really a hard thing for people. Like, what is the real value of something? Okay, so we, you know, try to say, well, it's 20 times earnings is what it should be for stocks. And if interest rates are this, it's that. I mean, you get all these things, right? Like, I'll come back to this, but the Shiller Index is a classic example of this. Or our price target for the year is 4,000 for the S&P 500. Okay. And so it's supposed to stop there on December 31st. Well, it won't. It won't hit there. It might hit it in June. It might hit it the following year. Doesn't make it wrong. It makes it actually dead on. And it's this whole kind of sifting through where markets overshoot on the upside and on the downside. And then if you want to make it really bad, then mix the soup up with, and then the individual components of the market, the companies themselves. I hate calling them stocks. You know why I hate calling them stocks? Because people think of stocks as like this thing. It's this thing. It's like part of this thing called the market. But I don't know what they are. And of course, it's companies. It's real companies that make things and earn money, pay dividends, and things like that. And when we think of it that way, instead of like stocks, then we actually get what this really is and why it really works, right? Anyway, I digress, obviously. So as we're looking at these components and they're overshooting and undershooting to an even larger degree than the overall market does, it's freaky. So when we look at a stock, we go, wow, that's an interesting thing. Take something like Teladoc, right? So Teladoc is obviously a big pandemic winner because you can't see your doctor. Nobody could see your doctor. Can't see other human beings, right? So you can't go see the doctor. So you have to be there in front of your little camera. See Kurt's here, it points here. And then you send in lab tests, all those things, right? And so you can have a consultation. But this was going on before the pandemic. And this is going on after the pandemic. But for whatever reason, one day, everybody got out of bed and went, I don't like this. Or Zoom's never going to do another Zoom call. Yeah, well, they will. But it's more than that, right? There's competition. There's other places coming. There's a zillion things. Why? But these components then don't go, well, we think they should be worth, you know, 20 times earnings. They may be worth 10 times earnings because it overshoots to the downside. We hate all companies like that right now. So they won during the pandemic. We will crush them. And it overshoots on the downside. That's what markets do. They may hit fair value for like 1 second on the way up and on the way down. I mean, it's like 1 second, whatever that fair value is. And so it does tend to be this thing where we come back and we try to figure it out. So I got this text from somebody, a client, and he said, well, that's an interesting chart, right? And it's somebody, weirdly, it was like on MSNBC. It was just weird, like MSNBC talking about the market. Okay. I don't know actually who could have captured that because I think their ratings are zero. But anyway, it was there on MSNBC, not CNBC, MSNBC. And this guy's talking about the Shiller PE ratio. Now, this is one that tries to kind of take it over a 10-year period of time. Kind of blend it, right? So you don't have the spikes and stuff like that. But this goes to show you exactly how easy it is to have charts and things like that that show whatever it is you want to show. So this chart has these squiggles up and down of what the trailing price to earnings ratio is. And that's a value, for those of you who don't know, it's a valuation of whether, you know, the people use to say whether the market is overvalued or undervalued or fairly valued or whatever, right? Here's the average. For all of history, it should be right here. Which it never is. Interestingly, if it was something that ever really worked, other than an indicator like, okay, there's more risk in the market than there was a little bit before, and so on and so forth, that's fine, and we all look at it. But the idea that something is supposed to be on average around 16 in a world that goes all the way back to, you know, World War II, that wasn't having technology change the world radically every 10 years. Something like that might make sense. Or even like companies like Amazon that are dominant that say, yeah, we don't want to make any money. So their PE ratio is like, you know, super high. They don't really care to make money. They pour it all back in. That's their business model. They spend all of their cash flow. So that makes them a bad company, I guess, or that makes the whole market overpriced. You know, things change, okay? So we have to be careful of these measurements as if they are static. But pretending they were and that 16 was average, well, shouldn't you sell every time when it goes to 18? And that's really the point of this chart. And so they put dots on the top, and then they tell you what it was. You know, dot-com bubble. And then down here, you know, recession lows. And they put another dot up here. You're like going, wow, you could really know that from this. That was really the point of the chart. Saying, yeah, and stocks are down a lot now, but they're still overpriced. And when you look, actually, just pull back from the chart and you go, you realize it was like a 10 or 12 or 8 or 9 or 15-year period in there where if you've made up some arbitrary, there's the average for this period that you're showing on the chart, it told you, like the Shiller Index, that you should have been out of the market for the last 12 years. Well, they're right for the last 3 months. But being out of the market from 10,000 on the Dow to 38,000 that pulls back to 30 is not right. That's not being right. That's being wrong. Like, really wrong. Really wrong. So when we overthink and look at individual components and what they're flying around, and we overthink a lot of these different areas, we have to understand that markets overshoot and undershoot all the time. They don't do normal. You have to say, in a market like this, this is totally normal. What do you mean it's normal? Up in the morning, down in the afternoon. Stop that. That's not normal. Yeah, it is during difficult times, churning times, where people are raising a little more cash if the market ticks up because they're nervous. Trying to raise a little more cash. Where we are simply, but when we look beneath the surface, what you have are inflation-sensitive stocks, meaning on the downside, inflation-sensitive, getting crushed. You have inflation-benefactor stocks doing fine. Energy, obviously, is one of those. Doing fine. So is the market broken when dividend-paying stocks that can raise prices, sales go up when inflation goes up, that they're doing okay? Does that make sense? Yeah, it does. So does this market make sense? Yeah, it kind of does. So we came off this period where everything is kind of weird. Now, kind of weird by... Here's what I'm saying. If you are trading stocks on your phone while you are riding in a tank or standing by the tank, which is most of the time that the military does, and I'm not making fun of that. It's just, what are they going to do? You don't drill all day long. You don't shoot weapons all day long. So they stand around a lot. A lot. And they gamble on stocks. Now, why wouldn't you go ahead and say, oh yeah, GameStop is this really great thing and they're running the shorts out. Well, what's a short? I don't know, but they told me that. Okay. So they make a lot of money. Like, wow, this is really cool. And of course, nobody stops to go, this is going to end badly. And of course, it always does. This is not how it works. But it does for short periods of time. So now everybody is getting crushed. So the GameStops of the world, they're down 90%. I don't know specifically if GameStop's down 90%. It doesn't matter. They maybe they're down 70, okay? But many companies are down 70 to 95%. Because they were not real companies. They did not have earnings and dividends and things. And so this market is crushing those. They're killing those. Way more. And then finally, you get in this market, you finally get what I consider to be incredible opportunities. In the high quality stuff. Amazon off way over 30%. Yeah, I missed Amazon. Yeah, I missed it. Oh, yeah, I know. Now you can. But are people flocking to Amazon? No, because everybody wants to get the lowest trade. Like, God's going to whisper in there. There it is right here. That's it. That's it. That's the price right there. Better grab it. Doesn't happen. But if there's great quality companies that have for 10 years not given you a chance to get in, you know, go from 100 to 3,000 or whatever it is, like Google and Amazon, Apple, and they have a big pullback like this. These are opportunities. Instead of, I don't know, there's inflation, it's Joe, it's all, and I get it. Man, I get it. It's frustrating. It makes you angry, doesn't it? It kind of makes you angry that the greatest nation in the world has idiots like this. Trying their best to ruin this country. That's not even a political statement. It's just like, what do they do? Just like get all the experts in a room, get all the smart people, and they go, okay, we should do A, so let's do B. I mean, look, oh, it's just unreal. Unreal. It's all about power. It's all about printing money. It's all about, just so weird. It's literally, and some of these folks, I know they're communists. Well, that's would be like, we hate our country. Why do we give people like that power? Ever. Ever. Why do we listen to them? Ever. It's frustrating. But all the decisions are bad. And watching Joe stumble from the helicopter to, you know, whichever door they're pointing towards. It's not just embarrassing. It's like, this is the leader of the free world. How can this get better? That's the point. Not to make fun of Joe. This was saying over there. You know what I mean? The market. It's like, that's not to make fun. That's like, how can it get better? How can it get better at all? And so it weighs on us, and we can't think, God, why would I invest? And it reminds me all the time, I'll talk about this in the next hour, peak of pessimism, right? Peak of pessimism. Can't get any better. So it does. It does. It just does. All right, I got to take a break. And when we come back, if you want to talk to us, we'd love to. It's 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. This is a really brutal time. Just a brutal time. It's hard. And in the next hour, I am going to talk about the peak of pessimism a little bit. And also, it's interesting that the market, there's, you know, how we talk about how, you know, the market was being led on the upside by only a small, narrow band of stocks. And this for 10 years. Literally, it's been 10 years. Was the reason people were being bearish, right? Not all people, goodness gracious, but many people, very loud people. Market's so overpriced. It's all just because Apple and Google and Netflix and da-da-da. All right? Well, you're not going to make the excuse on the downside that this is really only a few companies. But it is. Now, it's two things that are really pushing these markets around. Now, there's lots of things, but there's two different groups. It's these big giant tech stocks, yes, that are finally, after all these years, having a major correction. Something where buying the first dip was not the right thing to do. This has gone on for years, where growth has been the market, right? It's not you hear everybody talking about, well, value is very undervalued. You've heard that forever, like international stocks, they're undervalued. I mean, forever. Of course they're undervalued. They don't have the great companies the way America does. But at the same time, as you're looking at it, these are market movers. And what I mean by that is not like everybody looks at it and goes, oh, if Apple's down, then everything's down. But the market is down because it is a very high weight in the market. And that's true of the giant companies. So we've seen for the first time in years, Apple, Microsoft, Google, Netflix, Facebook, the big giant tech companies, if I didn't say so, Amazon, are so anyway, eight companies, just eight out of the S&P 500, which is not really 500, it's like 480, but S&P 500 are like half of the drop. Only eight are nearly half of the drop in the market so far this year. That's stunning. That is really stunning because that's how much of the weight of the market is those stocks. All the rest combined is about equal to those eight. That's really amazing. So when we look at that, the big giant growth companies that are the biggest components of the market, that's what's knocking them down. And then on top of that, we're seeing this flight to quality, if you will. But you can't go to bonds because interest rates are rising. They're getting crushed too. So we're seeing this strange flight to where? We don't know. It's interesting. Cash is piling up on the sidelines. We'll talk more about this in coming weeks. It's very interesting though. But we are seeing the market in some ways make an awful lot of sense. We'll touch on that. And we'll touch on the peak of pessimism in the next hour. Hope you'll stick around. And once again, our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, dave@petsofinancial.net. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. They're not this station, a broker-dealer, and we're not here to tell you what to buy, and sell. We are the anti-buy and sell. Always have been. No change here. Doubt I will. You know, it brings up an interesting point before I jump into what I want to talk about, though. We all have to change. One of the big changes I made, as I look at, I mean, there's a lot of littler changes, right? But the little ones that lead to the big ones don't usually jump out at you. You have to really think about what caused it, what types of things caused that. But it all comes back to this. You have to be flexible in your thinking. Now, I find in the world that that's not easy to do. We all have our, if you will, information dialed to us in exactly the format we want with exactly the opinions we want. It's true. I mean, we can sit around and talk about, you know, my daughter in Seattle and her filters of complete liberalism and progressiveness and all, because that's all of her neighbors. All, you know what I'm saying? It's just constant. And in her world, that's what she thinks is normal. So how can you input actual, like, you know, market theory, actual economic fact into a world that, you know, if you will, hi, I'm with NBC News. I'm a propagandist for the DNC. Oh, okay. That's a proud moment. Yeah, I'm with MSNBC. I'm a propagandist. Reporters? What are they? That's the world we're in now. Where people who, you know, we're in the propagandist room at the on the West Wing of the White House here. Okay. Weird. Yeah, we only allow two reporters in the entire group. Everybody else is a propagandist for the DNC. It's weird. It's a weird world we have. So you have to filter through all that. And you do, and you have to be able to be flexible in our thinking. In a world that doesn't want you to do that, that you have to take literal steps in your life to stop that from happening. You literally do. Oh, I got it. Sure. Yep. Yep, you're above it all. Because you're like not really a human being. I got this. I don't want to listen to that. That's nonsense. We got to have some thought and be able to change. Okay, so anyway. One of the biggest things. Only allowed in because you don't get stuck is the idea that we can measure value differently. And you're going to see how this exactly fits into what I'm talking about, or I talked about earlier. Is Amazon a value stock or a growth stock? Is Amazon too high a priced stock? Well, relative to earnings, yes. Relative to growth, too cheap. Relative to sales, too cheap. So what is it? Too cheap or too dear? How do we measure it? And the idea that you're always stuck is wrong. We're not stuck in value. I mean, for example, I really admire John Templeton. I'm going to talk about his greatest quote. One of his greatest quotes. He has so many great quotes. Why would I say the greatest? He is such a wise, wise man and was a deep value investor. And I believe absolutely with all my heart, he would simply say, you know, I need to change. There's a different way of measuring. You don't just measure earnings to price. You measure many different aspects. And embracing growth was a major change for me 25 years ago. From like looking for things, which are, you know, many call them value traps, all those things. And they're true. The world is changing very rapidly. We're putting satellites everywhere. And we, meaning not the government, like a guy and his company is doing that. We're doing amazing things very quickly. So as Starlink worth nothing because it doesn't have any earnings? I don't think so. It's probably worth a lot. You know, these are the things that you have to try to be thinking about and not just like, I don't do technology. Well, Warren Buffett said that a lot for a long time. His biggest holding now is Apple. I think he does technology. And his own words, one of the biggest mistakes he made was mistakes of omission. Not doing more in technology. Because it is. It's things change and we have to be in front of that. It doesn't mean you're like, I almost said something bad. Didn't mean to. You're wild and crazy and just can't figure things out. You're just skittering around. Bouncing around from thing to thing. Well, that's not working. That's not working. No, that's young men typically do that, right? Yeah, let's go chase the millions. Oh, yeah, crypto. Oh, yeah, gold. Oh, yeah. That's, you know, meme stocks, all those things, right? I can day trade because us guys, we got it, right? We got it. So anyway, as we think about these things, we have to be willing to change. We do. And embrace the fact that some things are changing in the way we should be thinking about things. And when it comes to technology and how fast it changes and how fast it can bend the curve from not making any money into making zillions, we have to be aware of that. Not chasing, but open. Open to it. So the idea that markets can't get better is real, okay? I feel it too. It is a total picture now of the lunatics are running the asylum. But the problem here is not just they want to wreck the asylum. They don't just have failed policies. They have policies that will forever change the greatest nation on earth. Do you realize how close we were to having Build Back Better? How close we were. And what inflation is doing now and the economic policies now are doing to inflation. What would happen if we added trillions of dollars and government did everything? Because they do things so well and so fairly. It's really wonderful to see that people don't fall through the cracks in government. The government never goes wrong. The IRS never targets certain groups for audits. That the Justice Department is incorruptible and the FBI are Boy Scouts. I want more of that. I just want them to take over because they're completely trustworthy, effective, productive, and fair. Weird. It's where we are. And most people feel it, hate it. Everything's wrong overseas. Afghanistan. There's nothing this administration has done right. I know. Hold it. If you don't like what I'm talking about politically, fine. Don't. Just listen. This is the feeling of Democrats on Wall Street. Nothing has been going right. Nothing. None of the decision-making of this group has been correct. From foreign policy to domestic policy to inflation and on and on and on. Nothing is positive. Everything they try to do is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. At some point, and that point has been passed, how can it get better and better? This guy's going to be in office for 3 more years. How can it get better? A fair point. That hangs over the top of all of this. And we can talk about P.E. ratios like we did in the first hour. We can talk about all these. It's overpriced. It's underpriced. Stocks are due for a correction. Blah, blah, blah. Inflation and this and that. What about interest rates rising? Everybody's nervous. And that's the stock talk of the day. But the reality is, when there is no confidence, why invest? Why expand your business? Why buy a house? That's why a lot of people are afraid of a recession. That's underlying. It's like, you know, we can underlie all of it with data. But the reality, what leads to a recession isn't just, well, it's inflation or it's job losses or whatever. Why would I hire people? if I think our profits are going to go away? Why do I expand into a new territory when I think I'll lose money doing that, or could, or I'm fearful of that? That's why things slow down. It's really, bottom line, a lack of confidence. But how do you measure that? Oh, well, there's a consumer confidence. Oh, God, Lee, that's just, they're never right. Consumer confidence is never right. Not really. I feel really bad. Well, how come people are spending money like crazy? I don't know, but they are. Yeah. We run through that all the time. And owning consumer stocks or not owning them because of consumer confidence numbers has been a very bad thing to do. Here's why I am confident at this time. Because I'm not confident. I know. That doesn't make any sense. I feel it too. Yeah, believe it or not, I'm human too. I hate what's going on in this country. I hate it. I hate the direction of this country. I hate the fact that this is what we elected. That but for one person, basically, maybe two, we would have completely Looney Tune policies here that I don't know how we come back from. That I don't know where inflation would go. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I'm positive that Build Back Better is not an anti-inflationary thing. That it's not a good idea on any level. Unless what you want is poorly run everything. Less productivity in society. Less individual rights in everything. That's just, it doesn't make any sense, and it didn't make any sense. That's how close we were. I feel that. I hate that. I hate woke corporations. I hate people like, oh, well, we really need to be voting a certain way because we need more LGBTQAI plus people. I know. I worked on that. And I dare you to try to figure out what AI plus is and how it's different from any of the other initials. By the way, if you have an answer, let me know, because I can't figure it out. But we have all this craziness going on that makes no sense. Like, how are we going to make more electric cars? We need more LGBTQAI plus people, and we have to have more female, gay, Black, Hispanic, whatever people. We don't need the best people. No. We need a lot of people that identify as a woman that actually were not born that way. Did I say that wrong? Am I not woke? I don't know. I don't know what to do. We're literally doing this and voting for these things. We have the NASDAQ out there talking about these things. Okay? One of my favorite things to say right now, tipping point. Tipping point. Massive amounts of editorials. Is this really the way to go to run corporations the best way possible? To worry about having certain boxes checked on every board of publicly traded corporations? Or do we want the best people running companies? Male, female, LGBTQ, whatever, and all that stuff, all included. Or are we really that racist that we go back to you can't have the job because you don't check the right box? All of these things combined feel to me like it's a tipping point. Also known as the peak of pessimism. Can't get better. Won't get better. Nothing can change. Why do anything? And history says when you hit those points, and hey, they can go on for a while, don't get me wrong. This can keep getting worse. Then something happens and things do get better. And waiting for those isn't going to be clear. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the war. I don't know if it's technology just continuing to roll forward. Stocks get cheap enough, it doesn't really matter. Amazon off 35% to a bunch of people appears like, well, that's good enough for me. I'm in. I don't know. I don't know at all of these points in time, just since 2008, when it couldn't get better, and the market got cut in half. And then we had QE1 and 2, all these experiments and all this craziness, and inflation was going to go out of control. And it didn't. And bond, municipal bond market was going to collapse, according to Meredith Whitney, wherever she is now. And Ebola and all, it's never going to matter until we get an end of Ebola. Hurricane Sandy, worst hurricane ever in history. Well, okay, all right, whatever. Oil prices collapsed. Remember that? California has the worst drought in its history, never going to get better. Goes on and on. And of course, even with our correction, that 10,000 that went to 5 is now 30. It happens all the time. Peak of pessimism. Can't get better. Can't get better in 09.
Obama's the president. He wants to kill everything. Healthcare is all he talks about. Big government. Destroy businesses. Runs around the world and sets it on fire. He was terrible.
Market went up. We forget. We forget. Peak of pessimism. Tipping point. I don't know. It's all the same. Innovation. I go back to it. I open up my charts and graphs and I go, oh, look at this. Look at that. America is 25% of the GDP of the world. Isn't that something? 25% GDP of the world. Right here. Right here in America. That's us. And we have about 5% of the population of the world. That's us. We do everything. And we have oceans around us. We have lots and lots of fresh water here. Lots and lots of minerals, great farmland, open space, and most importantly, the American experiment still going on. And we didn't die last year. We didn't. And people are a lot smarter. Progressives are gone this fall. Gone. Watch as the campaign unfolds. There will be no progressives running for office. Oh, maybe 5 of them, the squad or whatever. Because they have Looney Tune little districts they run in. Everybody else will pretend they didn't vote for Build Back Better, but they're fighting Joe and the progressives in order to try to save their seat. Some will save their seat because they're favored by so much. But they won't be running left. They'll be running to the right. They'll be running as normal human beings. Dialogue will shift dramatically. And Joe's irrelevant. We understand that. But corporate America, corporate world, which is what the markets are, is not. They're not irrelevant. They're innovating, creating every single day, 24/7. They just keep going. Stuff will happen, and I can't find myself. I find myself, yes, every day going, what the heck can go right? Tipping point, peak of pessimism. Feels like we're near it if we haven't passed it. And we can't give up hope. This is it's not just a hope. All of history says this really works. It does. And to not be buying quality companies when they're down this much doesn't make any sense. You need to. We need to. And certainly selling out. It's how you take temporary losses and make them permanent. We all know that. All right, I'm way over. Time for some phone calls. 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzlFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436-KIDO. I know it's one of those things where you feel a little bit like you're whistling past the graveyard, so to speak, right? Like it's all good. It's not good. That's not at all what I'm saying. If you heard that, that's I think you're misunderstanding. I'm always optimistic about the future because things tend to go right. Right? We don't speak German. We don't speak Japanese. You know, all of these things tend to work out. I mean, the big things. We're not communists. The big government failures are obvious to people that won't, that don't ignore it. I get it. The propagandist of major media is, it works. It works a lot on a lot of people. But again, our innovation, our creativity, our drive that America has continues to evolve and create some pretty magic things. Really does. You know, I wanted to mention this because I do mention it from time to time. That one of the things that when we're in difficult times like this, I mentioned to it, mention it. But there are things you can do if it just is overwhelming. I can't sleep, I can't this, I can't that. But you don't want to overreact emotionally. Again, it's like I said when I was with Kevin, I think this is why I have a job. Right? You don't overreact. This is very emotional. Oh, I don't run my finances by emotion. Right. Okay. Sure. Sure, robot person. You don't do that. Everybody does. What we have to do is stop ourselves from doing that. Right? You don't say, I'm going to invest, and then when it gets bad, I'm going to sell, so I sell low. And then when things get really good again, then I'll buy so I can buy high. So I buy high, sell low, and repeat that behavior, and I think that's going to work out just grand. But our emotions do that. That's what we want to do, right? Our emotions are that real estate's working great, and I really want that house, and so I'm going to make up all this. And if you don't think that I know that is true, then you don't recognize I have family. I have other people in my life. Did exactly that this past month. All justified and all written out as to why this was not really the top of the market and it was okay to overpay 30 or 40%. Because it's all going to be fine. So we justify a lot of different things. But if you want to change things and not just bail, I'm okay with that. Because sometimes people feel like they need to do something. And it makes them feel better. And then they can hang in there longer. So let's just do a little something. Okay, let's do a little something. That won't kill you. It's not, let's go to cash. Okay. But how about if we go, let's move some to this stable value thing that doesn't move a lot, that is earning more than 5%. Oh, I could, as long as we don't do all, sell it all and change everything dramatically, that'll work fine. What if we could get in a really volatile time? This is the cool thing about volatility. It really is. This is one of the things maybe that makes me very optimistic, because some of the things that pop up when there's extreme volatility are just incredible. I mean, incredible back up the truck events, right? About every 10 years, and in this case, the last time this happened was bonds was in 2009, beginning of 2009, actually the end of 2008. Okay. The bond market got decimated, and the spreads in high-yield bonds got so high that the world had to end or they would work. Get this. Bonds were up 50% in 2009. 50. But you didn't get that unless you were unafraid. Unless you said, fear equals opportunity. Fear is opportunity. Unless you said that, that's not yours. Because it was very fearful, or you didn't get those spreads blown out. When you bought, you say, I don't want high yield bonds. That's scary to me. Okay, fine. When you bought municipal bonds, when Meredith Whitney said they were going to go bad, bunches of them, And suddenly you have huge yields in high-quality municipal bonds. Fear equals opportunity. Even in other areas. And what we're seeing now with volatility is some unbelievable things in these structured notes, which are things that have uncapped upsides. Sometimes they're multipliers, and depending on how much insurance or assurance you want to buy beneath the market, you can do that too. So it's like you 20 or 30 or 50% of your downside is protected. Well, the market has never done that over a five-year period. And we're already down 20. And so what is really weird about these times where fear equals opportunity is that we're down 20%. So 20% of the risk is out of the market. That's just like defining it, okay? So it's already out of the market. So if it's down 20%, and that's pretty darn close, and we have a 50% downside cap, what we're saying over the next 5 years, we're saying in all of history, never has the market fallen 70%, period, number one. Number two, never in all of history has the market fallen 50% 5 years later. Certainly after it's gone down 20. Ever. Ever. And you're giving me the best deal possible. Why? Because of volatility. That's what I'm saying. So fear equals opportunity. You don't get better deals to protect your downside in times like this. Now, translate that to what happens in an annuity, which is why you can't run to them. A, they have extremely high hedging costs when volatility is this high. You're toast. So they can't offer good upside. The caps are very, very low. I know, because the only best I can do here in these notes is 7.65% cap. And that's got to be double what they can offer an insurance company. Got to be double. Why? Because there's no commissions. It's 10% commissions up front on an annuity. So you have that. And also, by the way, it's not tied up for 10 years. That's why it's not working. And interest rates are still low for these insurance companies. So you have 10% commissions up front, high hedging costs, can't work. But on the flip side of that, notes are particularly attractive even as risk is being wrung out of the market. Fear equals opportunity. All right, I'm way, way over. I got to take a quick break. Plenty of time on the other side to take your calls. Please do give us a call. 580-KATE-IDEO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And, of course, our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're coming up to the end here, so if anybody wants to give us a call, I think it's been like never that nobody's ever called. So my assumption is everybody's just listening, but my assumption could be wrong. And I would love to hear from you if you have any comments or questions, seriously. This is an interesting time to me. And, of course, I've got lots of stuff, and so I'll just wrap up the program here babbling away. But if you have any calls, 580-KIDO. All right, and also during the week, if you have any questions, comments, et cetera, that's petsofinancial.com. We also have our podcast there if you miss anything and want to catch it. We do have a fairly steady number of people that listen to those. So I know it's also easier if you miss anything to have it commercial free. So, all right. Now, I've already said this, but I'm going to say it again. Markets get better, and they don't announce it. They don't. I love this chart. I keep it in my little folder all the time. The only thing that changes about this chart is it's updated. But on average, every single year, the market falls 9.4%. It has one of those drawdowns at some point. That's its average. Now, sometimes it's only 3%. That's incredibly low. I think that's the lowest. Yeah, it's the lowest in the last 20 years. Maybe the lowest ever. Right? Drawdowns are normal. I'm sorry, but they are. I don't like it. Nobody likes it. It's what happens. And I shouldn't say I don't like it. I do like it. I don't like this because it's like every day relentless. And you don't know when or how that's going to stop. But drawdowns are good because you draw down and then you have opportunities to buy things at cheaper prices. Markets get better and they don't announce it. And every year has its own troubles. Some years, like this, have more trouble. But as we know, it doesn't always have trouble. All right, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Sam, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I felt sorry for you because you said nobody called in. that's got to be a tough job, sitting there in a studio booth talking to the wall.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do that. That's pretty good.
I'm used to it. Well, thank you. Thanks for helping me out, though.
Yeah, so I just had a question. You know, I'm not very sophisticated. I don't understand bonds, notes, T-bills. So maybe you could give an explanation of, you know, because there's a lot of terminology that's wrapped around these things. And I'm interested, and I like what you had to say. And I'm one of these guys that, you know, I mean, fear's a thing, but I've also overcome that in the past and bought in at the bottom. And, you know, even with this correction that we've had here on my equities anyway, I'm still up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are. We're just not up from the high water mark, right?
No. I'm not up from the high water mark. One of the accounts dropped. Don't tell my wife. Oh, my gosh. I watched one of those accounts drop $40,000.
Yeah.
In just a matter of, a week and a half, 2 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
$40,000. You know, and people say, oh, you lost money. I didn't lose anything. I didn't sell anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything. Just numbers on them, you know. Anyway, if you could go into a little bit of an explanation about bonds and bills and notes, and I mean, you know, you were talking about some of the opportunity here, and I've never taken advantage of those because I don't understand them.
No, and you got to be careful. And Sam, you know, you got to know on these things. I mean, seriously, the paper that comes with that is an inch thick, and I'm not joking. It really is. It's a big legal document on these notes. They are very complicated. And it's kind of a new area when I talk about notes. So let me just quickly, for everybody, okay, because that's a great question. So stocks represent ownership of companies, okay? So you own a share of stock, you get a share of their earnings, et cetera, paying dividends.
Or losses,
that's right. And if you have a bond, what you are doing basically, the easiest way to understand a bond is you're loaning money to a corporation or an entity like the government. You're lending them money. And there's a stated interest rate and a stated time that they have to pay you that back. Sometimes they don't. And the high-yield bonds are lower quality bonds, and we toss that term out all the time, okay? So high-yield or lower quality, also called junk bonds, okay? Now, and so you have all kinds of different bonds of different quality, and that's why they sell at different interest rates. Now, when we get into notes, this is where it gets complicated. These are structured notes that I'm talking about because they've become very popular in the last few years, very competitive for banks. And so we kind of became more interested in them about 5-6 years ago because they've been around for decades. It's just they were not good deals. But when you get something real competitive and you get something that really the computers figure out like that, right? I mean, it's like, bam. You don't have rooms full of people with slide rules figuring out options and how to hedge these things. So it costs nothing for these banks to put these deals together. And then they compete against each other. And then you have this thing called RIAs, us, me, our organization, right? Petzo Financial is a registered investment advisory firm where we can take, instead of you saying, I want $10,000 of that or $50,000 of that, you're not going to get a deal from JP Morgan because you got $25,000. But what if you're part of a group that does 5 million? Oh,
right.
Okay, then they're competing for that. And then you just take it to the local level and you 25 here, 200 there, 10,000 there, and it's divided up into accounts. Easy peasy.
Sure.
And with technology, everybody can do it. It's not hard work. And so that's what's really happened in that world where all of a sudden now you have better deals. And what happens, I just will explain it, and it's very difficult to understand. It's kind of counterintuitive. But when it gets really volatile like this, we get incredible deals. And so it becomes one of those things where if somebody says, well, I really kind of, I'm afraid, well, here's some downside. How much downside protection do you want? 20%, 30, 50? You want FDIC insurance? So there's nothing there. All of them are available. I don't recommend the FDIC insurance. It's incredibly expensive, right? But I trust JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, et cetera, that they're going to stay in business for the 3 years. That's the risk on the risk side, 3 years or 5 years or 12 months or whatever. I mean, there's notes of every color and slice out there. And you can slice them and dice them, but the reality is in the end of the day, that company has to stay in business just the same as an insurance company does on an annuity.
Uh-huh.
So that's why when people are saying, well, I don't know what to do, I'm really scared right now, you get all the annuity pimps going crazy. You get all the gold bugs coming out of the closets. You got all the people that tell you that Bitcoin is a thing to hedge against or whatever the fancy pants thing is now. And the reality is you just really ought to own the great corporations of the world and not worry about it. But when you get real volatile times like this, you can go for growth in a big way with little downside protection, or you can say, I'm really scared. I just want market participation, but I need some of my downside covered. And that's why I bring up the notes, because of what I want to tell people is there are alternatives. It doesn't mean come to Petzl Financial, but there's alternatives.
So you guys do these structured notes?
We do, because we understand them. Don't go do them on your own. They're terrible.
No. No. I haven't even bought municipal bonds on my own.
Okay, there you go. Well, you shouldn't. And that's the other thing. I mean, you got municipal bonds. You can do them in closed-end municipal bond funds right now, and they're yielding over 5%. I'm not saying that that's the best thing in the world, but for people that had municipal bonds, they were 2 or 3% not long ago.
Right. Well, and I stay away from stuff that I don't understand. And I've invested in some real dogs, you know. I mean, I knew what they were doing, and I liked the company, and I thought they had potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they walked away with my money, you know. I mean, like,
I know. It's true. No, it's nothing wrong with speculation if you have some experience, and it's a small part of what you're doing.
So
the core.
What percentage of a guy's, you know, would you put into some of these structured notes? I'm not adverse to risk. I don't want to be stupid either.
No. When I say structured notes, what I'm talking about is everything from low risk and no risk to high risk.
That.
Okay. So it's not, it's across the board. Yeah.
As a percentage of a guy's portfolio, what would you think right now putting into it? I'm just trying to get, I'll probably call you guys on Monday. I want to know what kind of money I might want to.
And you should not just put something, it has to fit in a portfolio. So everybody's different. So Sam, I can't say what you ought to have is 10% or 20%.
Okay.
Everybody is different depending on what they're trying to do. Some of them are actually income notes. But Sam, I got to cut you off. I got to roll, believe it or not. We're out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for your call. And Doug, you hang on. I'll grab you off air after we're done here. All right. I didn't mean to complicate those things. I just want people to understand. This. There are lots and lots of things out there, lots of alternatives, and fear equals opportunity. Take a deep breath. Sometimes it's right in front of you. Have a good weekend.